For the fans, by the fans, this is the Non-League Football Show, and I'm Tim Fuel, back with a weekly look at the world of non-league football. Their mean in defence, sharp in front of goal and flying ahead in the Isthmian South Central. But Bracknell Town boss Bobby Wilkinson isn't counting his chickens, nor his robins either, just yet. Things are, however, looking positive on and off the field in what looks like this was the project he was waiting for. Non-League Day 2022 is only a month away, and founder of the event, James Doe, reminisces about how it all came about and also gives some ideas of how clubs can get involved next month. It is the fifth round of the FA Cup next week, and with Boreham Wood, the sole non-league representatives, we call upon Phil Annette at FA Cup Factfile to furnish us all with the knowledge to understand and enjoy the eight ties just that little bit more. And after a long absence from the show, executive editor at the non-league paper, John Couch, returns to provide his knowledgeable insight into the big issues of the week and what we can expect to read in this weekend's edition. Plenty to come. Sit back, relax, and let's get matters underway. So let's talk to another old friend of the show and another manager leading his side in a great form. Top of the Isthmian South Central Division, 18 points clear, two defeats in the league all season. They've also only drawn once. They're clearly the team setting the pace. Let's speak to the manager at Bracknell Town and find out what the magic ingredients are. Let's welcome back to the Non-League Football Show, Bobby Wilkinson, manager at Bracknell Town.
Hello, how are you?
I'm good, Bobby. It's great to get you on. Sun shining, yeah, you're top of the league. I mentioned all those stats in the intro, which I hope were right, but the big telling one I left out was actually you've played 26 league games this season, but conceded just 10 goals. I mean, that's impressive stuff.
Yeah, that's some achievement for the boys, all the boys, and that deserve all that credit. Because five of them have been penalties and two have been two own goals. So that's something quite special. But I'm still annoyed with penalties, if I'm honest with you, and the two own goals. But they deserve a lot of credit. We work extremely hard on, you know, making sure we're hard to beat, like I've done at every football club I've been to. But the boys are, you know, they're going into every game believing they can win, believing that we're not going to concede. And, you know, so far, so good. You know, we've got a long way to go. It's nowhere near over yet. But very, very proud of all my players and my staff.
Yeah, you've told me now we're even more into those stats about, you know, a mean defence. But it's not the fact that you're parking the bus, because with 65 goals in those 26 league games, you're also the leading scorers in the division.
Yeah, I don't really ever mention enough of that, to be honest. Yeah, because a lot of people would think, oh, we're parking the bus, we're hurting, on the counter-attack. We're a flowing football inside, but we've got to do our jobs in our own departments, and that's what we've coached them a lot this year, to win your individual battles, to make sure the whole group defend when we've got to defend, but then we attack as a group as well. And yeah, we're quite fortunate at the moment. We are overachieving everything we wanted to achieve in that department, but like I said to you, it's still a long way to go, but yeah, we scored some fantastic goals. We're playing some beautiful football this year as well. And, you know, it's a very good place to be manager at the moment, but it always is when you're winning. Everyone knows that. But when we've gone through the hard time this year and them kind of defeats, the two defeats, we've bounced back to make sure we win the week later. And, you know, that's a sign of a good side. But my boys are giving me absolutely everything at the moment, if I'm honest with you.
Yeah, I remember speaking, there was me, Dave Anderson, yourself on the show back August 2019. You were out of a job. You were telling us that you were looking for the right project. Now, we speak to managers week in, week out, and that, you know, quite often they say, yeah, I'm waiting for the right project to come along. I'm looking at you now. We've had the hardest time football's had, certainly since I've been involved, with COVID times and that sort of thing. It looks like you've picked the right project.
Yeah, I could still remember the conversation with yourself, and, you know, I'd been offered a couple of jobs. So I was only out of work for a couple of months. You know, I left Wildstone. Everyone knew that because my son wasn't very well. And, you know, one of the biggest keys I would say to you, it could have been the wrong project and the wrong job, because I'd gone lower in the league. So, you know, if I'd failed at Bracknell when I came in, it could have been really killed my career. But I met the chairman, and he's built a brand new training facilities that are just out of this world. He's built a brand new ground that we're playing at the moment. So all the facilities are brand new. So far, the project is on course. We're on course where we want to be. Long way to go. At this precise moment, it's been the right move. We've had a few other clubs come in this year and last year wanting to speak to me. Mm. Chairman's not even allowed it. I'm on a deal here, everyone knows, so I'm being loyal to him as well. The chairman knows I want to manage back higher up in the leagues, but at this precise moment, he's following me off the pitch as well as I'm doing it on the pitch. It's a good partnership at the moment. So loving every minute of it. And yeah, it was the right move at the right time for me because it's worked out to be okay.
Yeah, and I sense lockdown may have been beneficial to you as well because you've kept your squad together, which obviously helps with that. You know, it sounds like you're enjoying it, the chairman's enjoying it, everybody's enjoying it. So that helps to keep the club together. So in recent years, you've got players that are working under you that know you, that know each other, and that really is. I mean, I look week in, week out, and I look at the clubs that are at the top and the clubs that are at the bottom. The ones that are at the top are the ones that have got a core unit of people that have been there for a long time.
It's a fantastic question. Yeah, that's exactly what you've got to do. You know, I've been at three wonderful clubs, Hungerford, Wealdstone and Bracknell, and I've always built great teams around me. And that's been one of my biggest challenges and biggest things in my manager's career. I built another good side, you know, because you can do it once and people say it's luck, but to do three teams and be right challenging for silverware every year and to bring a spine of a squad and keep the players, it's been a challenge at times. But during COVID, I learned how to use a laptop. I learned how to use Zoom. I learned how to still train on Zoom. I kept everyone together because it's not just about football, it's about family there. My missus works with the NHS, so does my mum. So I wanted to make sure I reached out to these players and wanted them to play for me, not just the football club. And that's what I've done at every football club. But this bunch of players, we've had lots of teams come in and try and take my star players again. And we've stuck together as a unit together to achieve what we're trying to achieve this year, is to get this team up to the next level and then rebuild to go again. So yeah, it's a fantastic question. Yeah, they've been loyal to me as much as I've been loyal to them. When I could have left myself or they could have left, we've all stuck together, my chairman included, to get through COVID and achieve something that we started in 2019, 2020.
Mm-hmm. And you've got a good mix of youth and experience, and you know, like you've got your managerial experience from a higher level. You also got players that have played at a higher level too, which must help in the dressing room. Would you expect, you've got 10 games left, you're saying, you know, it's still not finished. Well ahead of the chasing pack, shall we say, at the moment. Would you expect most of those to compete for the club at the next level up too, if you achieve that?
Yeah, I've put five or six or even seven now on deals for next year. So yeah, they can compete. What I did when I came here is, when you come to these sort of football clubs, it's all local people to start with. That's why they've never gone up in the leagues. So what I wanted to do here was build a side. I wanted to make sure Bracknell wasn't just a local side anymore. I want to put Bracknell on the map, where, like I did Hungerford, because Hungerford was just a village side when I went there. So I want to put these teams on the map. So we're going best players. But what I did is I went for youth that could be here for the next 2-3 years. You know, I hear a lot of managers and a lot of teams go, oh, our side's young. Well, actually, my side's all under basically 21, 22, 23. But what I did this year, I knew we'd be up there competing, I wanted to go and get the Dave Tarpeys, who's been around, very experienced. The Scott Reese's experience was with me at Hungerford. So I wanted to go and three players were in their 30s, and I wanted the rest of the youth. And that's what we've done. And it's worked and it's gelled right once again, like we've done. It's worked with a little bit of experience. And what I've done as a manager, I've let them take ownership. Mm. They take ownership of their change room. They take ownership of what they need to do to win games. We prepare them properly, but they put into my philosophy of, you know, prepare for training, prepare for the game, and then the result will happen itself. And that's all we've done. And it's been a pleasure working with every single one of them.
Yeah, and you know, you are leading the way there. Step four, the South Central Division of the Isthmian League, which is one that I know well, and
yeah,
it's quite a tight sort of division. You know, not only in it's a competitive division this year. You know, Chertsey, Uxbridge, you got Basingstoke at the weekend, Hamwell, Bethnal Sports, Marlow, Binfield. Even there's a lot of clubs that have still got hopes of certainly doing well in the playoffs, if not catching you this year. And there's not so much travel where you've got your sights set on step three, I guess. But any thoughts on whether that may see you switch to the Southern League from the Isthmian League, as has happened before with other clubs that have come out of the South Central Division?
Yeah, see, I'm a firm believer is if we get out of here, we just take whatever challenge is thrown us. Challenges get thrown at footballers and football managers all the time. And that's when I think my experience does come, even with my chairman. I don't believe in worrying about what happens next week or in a month's time. Let's just take one week at a time, one game at a time, one challenge at a time. Keep the lads grounded. You know, a lot of people have said, especially there's been a lot more interviews the last few weeks. I've not really done any, to be fair. But the respect I have to you and what you've done for me over my years with some great interviews, I wanted to speak to you. I just want my boys to achieve what they deserve to achieve for how hard they work through some real difficult periods in COVID, because it's been frightening at times, very difficult, and I don't want them to worry about what's coming next year or even next week. All we're concentrating on is tonight's training session, and then when we finish we'll concentrate on Basingstoke. And then that's down to the chairman. You know, if we've got a lot more travelling to do, you're going to have to pay for more coaches. You're going to have to pay for this, pay for that. But that would be the challenge. If we can't afford a coach, we'll go by car. And we can't go by car, we'll go by train. So that would be a challenge we throw at each other. When we sign as a group, we make sure they know these situations. And I think that's where the respect comes as a manager. If I say we can't go by coach, we can't go by coach. So sometimes I know that sounds a little bit daft, you know, but I'm just talking real to yourself so we don't look too far ahead.
Yeah. And is that opportunity? Is that the big difference between, you know, where you've managed at higher levels of the non-league pyramid to where you are at the moment? Is it opportunity and, I suppose money always comes into it, but fitness, mindset, what are the big differences between step four and maybe step two, step one?
Money can be a big issue, a big thing. We all know that. People say it's not. You know, like we've been told because we signed Dave Tarpey here, we're paying loads of money. Well, that was about to retire, and I just went and knocked on his door on a Sunday afternoon and got him out of retirement. But, you know, that's everyone's excuse. It's money, isn't it? And that's a big frustration for me in football. No one's really praised us this year for just being a fantastic side, unit, fitness-wise, because I was taught as a manager very early on, if your team aren't fit or they're not organised, that's your fault. That's no one else's. So that was one of the biggest things I learned in football. So when we go to a league above, we'll be the fittest in the league above. We'll be more organised than the league above, if we can get there, by the way. Like, and that's still a long way away in my eyes. If we get there, we will prepare to be ready for it. You can't compete with certain teams with the money and stuff like that. And no problem. If they've got money, fair play to you. If they've got no money, fair play to you. Let's just get a team out there to compete, wear the badge with pride and see if we can win games at any level that we play at.
Yeah, and you mentioned the chairman a couple of times there as well. Success this year has struck me in particular because you're in a state of flux, really, aren't you? You had a great little ground, but it didn't have the space to convert that into moving up the pyramid. So you're now playing at Sandhurst Bottom Meadow, and there's various plans going on there. And it is that project mentality, isn't it? That you know, there's longer term plans that mean this club can go forward and can move up, but I'm sure for everybody sort of moving further down the road from the ground at Largest Lane where they were enjoying their football, that's been difficult as well, but you've adapted very quickly. What are the long-term plans for Bottom Meadow, and how far could the club go up?
Well, it's another great question. You know, we lost about 100 fans, I reckon, because we moved from this lovely club that we're at to Bottom Meadow. But the question that I would throw at any of them fans, did you want us to go up, or did you just want us to stay step four? So the chairman made a decision, is if he's putting in money and he's putting his heart and soul and his family, well, I'm not just going to stay at step four. So the club had to move, because he built a lovely, beautiful ground here, where, you know, it was perfect for step five, step four. But then he decided he wanted to go further. And that's hence why I got the phone call. Bottom Meadow has an unbelievable project that's happening there at the moment. Could that still change? You never know. But at this moment, it takes us into the next level, and then the level above that, I'd assume, because he's already put the fittings in for another stand if we need another stand. So it's down to the chairman and everyone together where, how far we want to go. The fans that we lost, devastated that we lost some fans. Hopefully they will come back, because they're seeing what we're doing. And by the way, we have seen a lot more coming back. Mm. And guess what? I understand their frustration. They love their little football club. They love it here. But for the club to move forward, he had to move. He had to move, you know. And I give him so much praise, not just because he's my chairman, you know, because he built this unbelievable training facility that it took all these kids off the streets. Brought in academy football, you know, give the first team a structure to train brilliant every Monday, every Thursday, not worrying about AstroTurf or the winter or the weather. So he deserves all that, not just because he's my chairman and that's what I should be saying. That everything I'm saying to you, there's facts. He promised me training facilities. He delivered. He promised me a ground. If I can get him out of the league, he'd deliver. And so far, he's done that. How far it will go, that will be down to him. At the precise moment, everyone's loving it at the football club, and it's great to see these fans coming back and, you know, chanting their players on every week now and seeing what we're doing. But we do miss the ones that, you know, haven't come down because they think it's at Bottom Meadow, Sandhurst. But I understand their situation as well.
Yeah, well, it is it's that constant battle, isn't it, for club owners to keep the old and the new happy and progress and keep things ticking along. The world's a very different place from even when you first took over at Bracknell Town. So we have to be looking ahead. And you've got, what, 10 league games left. I'm guessing you're going to tell me you're going to take each and every one of those one game at a time.
Yeah, I promise you, I'm never going to change like that. You know, because my main priority with these boys is to get into the playoffs. Then when I get into the playoffs, it's to finish high as I can. And that's where my experience has come in this year with these boys. Because remember, they got here once before a couple of years ago and then failed, just got into the playoffs. So I truly am just doing one game at a time and just see where we end up. That's all I'm doing, because, you know, if you win it, you should have won it. If you lose, you're a bad manager or you're a bad team. So whatever we've decided, we can't win or lose. So everyone knows the project that we're building here. So I truly am only thinking of Basingstoke. And if Basingstoke beat me, I brush myself down and I go on to the next game against Northwood the week after. And if they beat me or we beat them, and then I brush myself down, I'm not even looking any further ahead until we know we've done it. And then if we do it, it will be up there with one of the biggest achievements I've done, because we have turned the whole club around, because it's not just a normal club now. It is that the club is getting on the map. You know how well we've done in the trophy last year and the year before. Not many people do know. We've only lost, I think, since I've been here, I think we've only lost the two games since I've actually been here. So that's over 60-odd games now, whatever it is. So that's a great achievement in itself. But we don't want to speak about any of that yet until we've actually done it. Then when you've done it, then the interviews, and then hopefully you can make history, make a few stats and stuff like that, and then enjoy the moments. But I'll be honest with you, I'm not sleeping at all at the moment, because I literally just am concentrating on the next game. I wish I could sleep. You sacrifice your family and your kids, and everyone's seen that in my interviews. They must think, yeah, he just says that. I'm literally living and breathing this. My passion is on fire like it always has been. And I just want these boys to achieve what they deserve to achieve, because their sacrifice this year and the year before, it's just been incredible.
Whatever it is you're doing, Bobby, you're doing it well. And it's been a pleasure to get you back on the Non-League Football Show. We'll follow your progress, of course. And hopefully we'll speak to you maybe at the back end of the season when you've relaxed a little bit more.
I would absolutely love to come on at the end of the season when I can be just more relaxed and enjoy a conversation with you and not be worried about Basingstoke on Saturday. But I love your show. I love coming on. And thanks so much for inviting me back on today. It's been a pleasure.
So let's talk to another old friend of the show and look ahead to a month's time. Yes, Non-League Day, the 26th of March 2022. A time to celebrate all that is non-league and introduce your friends to what they have been missing out on. It is, of course, an international break, but with England in friendly action against the Swiss, it really is a great time for clubs, fans and the like to get involved and promote football at our level of the game. So who can tell us more? Only Mr. Non-League Day himself. He's going to hate that. And he's one of the nicest but most unassuming men in the game. But we have a lot to thank him for. So welcome back to the Non-League Football Show. Founder at Non-League Day, Mr. James Doe. Welcome, James.
Thank you very much, Tim. Great to be here again.
Well, it's always great to have you. It's always great to be in your company, James. Virtual at the moment. I don't say that lightly. We do owe you a lot, James, because you have helped filter non-league to a whole new set of audiences, which I'm sure has boosted the crowds. But even if they follow from afar, it's all been great for non-league.
Yeah, well, it's very kind of you to say that. It's been quite a, 2010 we started. So we've had these 2 years off. So I think it's our 11th event this time. And I definitely get the feeling interest in the game at our level has increased over that time. I don't know if it's all down to us, of course not, but I definitely think it has had an impact. I mean, I was speaking to one of the volunteers who works for me on Non-League Day the other day. They've recently joined the team and they said they went to their first ever match on Non-League Day in around 2014, 2015. Wow. I can't remember the date. And they're like heavily involved in the club they're with now. It's gone full circle for them. And now they're really involved and invested in the game.
And also, I saw recently, recognised by academia as well.
Oh, yes. That was a bit of I've forgotten about that because a year or two ago, a team of researchers at the Aston Business School at the University of Aston approached me and just asked me for the dates of all the non-league days we'd held over the years. So they could sort of crunch the numbers and see if there'd actually been any sort of tangible effect that could be measured on Non-League Day, and according to them, it was a very scientific paper. I tried to make the most of reading it. It was quite hard to get through, but the headline was that it had. They wrote back to me and said, yes, you should be very pleased that the effect is definitely there, and we've studied it and found that it is there. So that was an amazing breakthrough.
Yeah, and brilliant to hear as well. And of course, you need much credit for making Non-League Day happen, but maybe we should also be acknowledging the influence of a top-level manager. He's a bit like Marmite to many, but Mr. Neil Warnock, is this a conversation we've had before? I know from my own contact with him over the years, he's a big non-league fan, and Non-League Day probably wouldn't have actually come about without your own trip following QPR on a pre-season trip to Tavistock, I understand, which was very much...
Right.
That was a Warnock-led tradition, wasn't it? In playing in the West Country, West Country-based clubs when he was the Rangers manager. I think mainly because he had another home down in the West Country. But he is a big non-league fan, so he's not stepped up to the plate to help out at Non-League Day this time round.
I don't know. He hasn't approached me, but it is definitely the case. Yeah, I mean, it was a tradition of every club he managed. I think he took them down to Tavistock and Bodmin and places like that in pre-season because, he has a residence in Cornwall, I think. And I mean, I went to see Harrowborough, my team, play at Truro a couple of years ago, and he was in the crowd, just, hanging out, watching the game like everyone else. So, he's had quite an impact on this because, it was a trip down to watch QPR play at Tavistock that reignited my passion for non-league because I'd always followed Harrow, but when I was a teenager, and it kind of drifted a bit, and then it just sort of relighted the fire again, and Non-League Day was born.
And from there, it's gone from strength to strength. It's all about getting people out and about and enjoying non-league football, isn't it? And as you say, it might not even be their usual club that they follow either. I know I've been on hops in the past, and yourself, you certainly get around throughout the season, not only with non-league day hat on, and also author of the London Football Guide, but also your running tour of non-league clubs. So tell listeners more about that.
Okay, well, that's only just started this week. It's something I thought I would do because I love running. And we do a lot. We have a charity partnership with Prostate Cancer UK, and they're very much into physical challenges, you know, to raise money and awareness around their cause. It sort of occurred to me that there's loads of clubs in London, where I'm based, that are going to be hosting games on non-league day. And I just thought, well, I'm always looking for different ways to run and themes to my running. So I thought, well, I'll just sort of draw a map between a few of the clubs and, you know, do it in a few sections.
You started at Wembley?
As in Wembley FC.
Oh.
So, because I thought, you know, there's a sort of big football connection there. So I thought I'd start there. And then I sort of went sort of north-east, so gradually. So I went up to Silver Jubilee Park because Edgware Town are playing at home. And then I went a bit further up to Wingate and Finchley, and then went a bit further up and ended up at Cockfosters. So, it was uphill all the way. I was very tired by the end of it. But that was the first leg, and it was, I think it was 23 kilometres in total, because there was a couple of wrong turns along the way, which added to it. But, and hopefully I'm doing my next one tomorrow, which will be sort of our side of London. So maybe Hayes and Yedding will get a visit.
Well, I'll make sure that the flags are out for you. Talk about bringing all your passions together once. You know, that you mentioned the first non-league day in 2010, and bringing it forward to, you know, this week where we are. Yeah, I saw that you had a non-league day meeting at the new Premier League headquarters in Paddington.
That's right.
I mean, back when you first started, could you have ever have contemplated that this is where this little idea would get to?
No, of course not. I mean, I didn't think it would get beyond my sort of close friends. I mean, that was the intention. And, you know, my friends, you know, had set up a group, an event on Facebook just to say, go and watch non-league football on the international break. And, you know, a few of them reposted it to various people. And it went viral from there. So to have this, you know, going to the Premier League, who have become, you know, really helpful promoting the day over the years. I mean, they've been with us for, you know, 5 or 6 years now. But it gets bigger every year, and they apologise every year that they haven't done more. But there's some pretty exciting plans. I mean, the Premier League have been really helpful. I mean, just prior to the pandemic, we were on the verge of setting up a sort of a pan-European non-league day. And we had a big meeting in Paris with the organisers of the French one, who are based at a big football magazine in France. And they had their counterparts in Germany on Zoom. And it was like, it was all set to go. We had people in the Netherlands as well, and maybe Spain. And it was just gradually going to build up to this big pan-European event. And then COVID happened, and we've all, you know, got a bit broken up since then. But you never know, it could get back on again.
Oh, and hopefully, you know, the 26th of March will drive everybody forward again and put it at the forefront of everybody's mind. Obviously, there's lots of things planned already, various clubs and that. But I wanted to get you on because we want as many clubs as possible to embrace things going on. So still a month for clubs to get involved, get things organised. What sort of thing could they be or could they be doing? What are other clubs doing? And how can everybody get involved in non-league day?
Okay, well, I mean, we've seen various promotions and activities and offers over the years, and it all kind of developed gradually. I mean, there's the very sort of straightforward thing of offering some sort of discount on tickets. That was the very first thing that anyone ever did. And what we've seen with that is the most effective sort of offering should be universal and apply to everybody. Some clubs just target their special offers at fans of the bigger clubs, which alienates their own fans, which, you know, it's not ideal. So the best sort of scheme we've seen along those lines has been something like pay what you want, and it's applied to everyone. And we found some clubs that have done that, that more often than not, fans come along and are prepared to pay the going rate so they don't lose out, and loads more people come. So that's the sort of the basic thing you can do is, you know, financial incentives. We've seen, you know, much more zany things like Bungie Town famously giving away their free punnet of mushrooms to people coming through, which made headlines around the world. We've had, I think it's Great Yarmouth, we're doing free bloaters, which is the sort of the fish sandwich. They were, it's a bit of a delicacy there that got people in. I've always liked at Grantham Town, they usually especially go and make some gingerbread people and give them away on the gate, things like that. So there's things like that, very basic, straightforward, but very, you know, attention grabbing. So the more unusual and unique your offering, the more headlines you're going to make, and the more people will hopefully come. There's got other things whereby, you know, you could reach out perhaps to former players who may have turned pro, get them to come along, a bit of extra glamour to the day. I know some clubs are trying to do that this year. I won't name them just in case it doesn't come off, but things like that. Just reach out to local dignitaries, have community days, maybe partner with a local charity or our own charity or State Cancer UK. They're looking for people, clubs to work with, and they'll send lots of resource to help you do that. It's the sky's the limit, really. Just be as inventive as you possibly can, and we find that people embrace it. I mean, in the, you know, the club I support, Harrowborough, we've got the England match at Wembley on our doorstep. So today the club have announced they've managed to agree with Merthyr Town, who they're playing, to move the kickoff back by an hour to 2 o'clock. So hopefully some fans going to the England-Switzerland game will come and watch Harrow first, and then they'll have ample time to get to Wembley afterwards. So things like that. Maybe if there's another thing you could do along those lines is if there's a whole cluster of clubs in one area all playing at the same time, perhaps stagger your kickoffs and maybe arrange a ground hop. That has happened in the past. That can be really good, but that does take a lot of organisation. I understand that. But that's an option.
Well, plenty of ideas there and plenty of reasons for clubs to get involved, because it is about non-league day, but it's also about the wider impact that has on the on you as a club, but also non-league as a whole, because it tends to be that if you can grab them for that one day, you grab them for life, whether that means that they're coming in, week out, or they're coming in, you know, maybe even three or four times a year. That's still a great asset that you probably wouldn't have achieved without non-league day. And there's lots of things that we wouldn't have achieved without non-league day, and we wouldn't have achieved without James Doe. It's always a pleasure to get you on the show, James. Thank you once again for your time, and we'll speak to you again very, very soon. But enjoy non-league day 2022.
Thanks a lot, Tim.
So next week is an odd one, when isn't it, in non-league? It is the last 16, round 5 of the FA Cup, but it comes about midweek and commences before we're next with you. So it may not be FA Cup weekend, but it is time to start the excitement. So there is only one man to light the touch paper or wind the dynamo and get that brain matter working. He's non-league's very own Mr. Wordle, I think. He's the reason people rise early in the morning, but he doesn't always get the credit or the monetary rewards he really deserves. Although, if the New York Times are looking for an FA Cup stats column, I'm sure our next guest would be very interested. It is, of course, a warm welcome to the non-league show. Welcome to FA Cup Fact File, Mr. Philonets. Welcome back, Phil.
Hello, Tim. It's great to be talking to you at such a late stage in the competition.
It is fantastic, isn't it? It's sort of we talk about the magic of the FA Cup, and it really is there. The last 16, but one of those is a non-league club, and given it sounds wrong, but their mean defence because they've not conceded. I would guess. Yeah, both in the FA Cup competition and also in the league, they're a mean defence. Yeah, I would guess Boreham Wood are probably one of the most in form of all the clubs left in the competition.
Yeah, they are very strong at the moment. Doing very well in the league, but it's their cup exploits that everyone is sitting up and taking notice of. And you're exactly right. Not yet conceded in 5 FA Cup games to get all the way to the fifth round. That is the... It's the first time any non-league club has achieved that feat. So they're just a tenth to make it this far in the competition since it was restructured in 1925. But to do so without conceding is just phenomenal.
It is, and we'd be celebrating, you know, if a club had gone five games without conceded in the prelims and the qualifying rounds. Yeah. But to do it and still have a clean sheet entering the fifth round really is momentous. And it's great that you've got the stats there that are telling us as to how many clubs have even got this far.
Well, exactly right. And when you think about the fact that they've also played a couple of teams from much higher up the pyramid than they are, to have achieved that feat, you know, I guess later a little bit was saying that if it were the Premier League team that had done this, they'd be in the cup final and everyone would be raving about them. But, you know, they really need to be shouted out a lot across the football world. This achievement is just brilliant. Mm.
And you mentioned that those are, cup sets as they were. Two league clubs already dispatched in the last two rounds. I'm guessing the stats aren't that favourable for a club to do it a third time, though.
Yeah, I mean, obviously... We have precedents of non-league clubs achieving multiple scalps from the Football League. And interestingly, back in 1985, it was Telford United who set the record for four consecutive Football League teams defeated on their run to the fifth round, where they met Everton. So a little bit of a sort of history repeating here. So unfortunately, they didn't have enough to defeat Everton, but they gave a great account of themselves in the 3-0 defeat. So, you know, it's great for Bournemouth to set a new record, but, you know, there have been trailblazers before them.
Yeah, and obviously beyond the non-league interest, we are talking about the greatest cup competition in the world. 15 other clubs are involved as well. What stats and facts and wonderful things can you entertain us with?
Well, the one stat I've pulled out of here, apart from the Everton versus Bournemouth game, all the other matches have seen teams facing each other again in the competition, having done so in the past. Yeah. And in all seven of the other ties, the away team has a better head-to-head record in the competition than the home team. So if the games go with FA Cup form, we'll get seven away victories plus a game going to penalties between Everton and Bournemouth.
Well, I obviously I've been involved with a football club and under the FA betting rules, I can't bet on that possibility, but I do wonder what the odds would be.
Very high, given that too, you've got some big teams at home in the competition as well. But yeah, there's every chance, I think, of a couple of upsets. But at the end of the day, it's midweek, under the lights. You know, you may see a bit of change in the way that teams perform. Who knows? But there's always going to be one upset at least, and it'll be interesting where that comes from.
Yeah, I was going to say that this spread across the week, malarkey. I know you're a bit like me. You love a bit of tradition. I just hope it doesn't spread the excitement too thinly.
Yeah, you know, people do reminisce a little bit about FA Cup games in the evening and think of them as major occasions, and they have been. But in the past, they've primarily always been replays, which have obviously had a game already that's happened and sort of built up that tension between the two clubs that then comes to the fore in the replay itself. I'm not a big fan of midweek games. It feels less special for the competition. You know, a bit like the League Cup has always been midweek and the FA Cup's always been a prominent weekend game, which has taken precedence over league matches. Just seems like it's going down the pecking order a bit too far at the moment.
And I think, again, the midweek element almost takes out a potential section of the fan base as well. We talk later on this week about non-league day coming up and how, you know, clubs are trying to embrace new fans and people to come and watch the game, but we're not in half-term. Half-term would have finished, so yeah, Bournemouth are doing well. I think nearly 1,800 they're taking up to Everton, but you've got to think there's probably an element of the younger fan base that just won't be allowed to go because of it. Yeah. It's a long way to go. It's in the middle of the week on a school night.
Yeah, it's a real shame, really, because many young fans get their first taste of top-level football via the FA Cup, because obviously season tickets don't count for FA Cup games, and therefore there's more opportunity for the casual visitor to go to a match, and maybe, you know, a regular goes and manages to take their youngster with them to give them their first taste of football. And obviously, if you're doing that in midweek, where it can be difficult to take kids at that late stage, you know, they don't get back till past midnight on a school night, as you said, it does mean there's a few missed opportunities there.
Mm. And talking of missed opportunities, we all know the value of your good self, Phil. Normally, every FA Cup round, you're hopping around, you're getting to this game and that. Any invites open this week? is Mr. Philonet's going to pop up on our screen somewhere, or maybe at a game?
I'd love to be able to get to a game. I'm still hoping that I can get to the Everton Bournemouth match to see a bit of history there. But as at the moment, I'll be like most others and watching the games on the TV.
We are talking about the greatest cup competition in the world. And in fact, it's such a great cup competition. It's so good and so important, especially in the 150th year, that some bloke I know has written a book about it. FA Cup 150, Phil, tell us more and how people can pick up a copy.
Yeah, so FA Cup 150 is the title of the book I've produced to celebrate the 150th anniversary of the FA Cup. And it's available from my website, facupfatfar.co.uk/shop. Or more conventionally, you can buy it via Amazon by searching for FA Cup 150.
And of course, you mentioned, you know, as ever, you've done stats on each and every one of these games. How can people read about them?
Yeah, so you can get access to my fifth round preview via my Twitter account at FA Cup Fat File. And there it will take you to the WordPress /FACupFatFile.com preview of that, and access to a whole host of other FA Cup and other football related blogs that I produce.
And hopefully, Phil, this isn't going to be your last appearance with the FA Cup Fact File hat on this season. Yeah, we're fingers crossed that there will be some history made by Bournemouth, and we'll have you back on. But of course, we'll be speaking to you again soon with your FA VARS Fact File hat on. But as ever, always a pleasure to get you on the show. Thank you for your help, and enjoy the week of the fifth round.
Thank you, Tim. You too. Cheers.
So let's round off this week's news. It's time to head on over to Non-League Paper Towers once again. And it's a welcome back to the Non-League Football Show to an old friend. We've not heard from him for a while. It's the executive editor at the Non-League Paper, Mr. John Couch. Welcome back, John.
Thank you very much for having me. It's great to be back.
Well, you're like one of those... You're the important cog in the running of the paper, but they keep you in the dark because you're so busy. Yeah. I think that's the thing.
I think it's like it's a bit like a face for radio kind of thing. I think they like to keep me inside. You know,
I feel your pain, John. And now we've known each other for far too many decades, probably.
Yeah.
Knowing, this game of non-league, that there are very few people that I would feel comfortable that the baton to be handed over to you. So, it's great to get you back on the non-league show, because I know you know your stuff. And well, let's break you back in gently. The managerial merry-go-round, we like to talk about that every week on the non-league show. And last week we spoke about Andy Peake's leaving AFC Rushden and Diamonds to join Tamworth. And this week, we can reveal a new interim manager at Diamonds in the form of former legendary player Andy Burgess. Now, the club still very much in the playoff chase in the Southern League Premier Central, and this is quite a coup for the club. Not only is he a fan favourite from his playing days, but much respected as a coach, especially in the ladies' game. He's had some assistant roles like Corby Town, places like that, but in the ladies' game, he's managed Sheffield Wednesday, Nottingham Forest and Leeds United. Rushden Diamonds, 11 games left to seal a playoff spot with a home game against Hensford on Saturday. But it certainly looks like, as interim managers goes, this is a good appointment.
Yeah, it certainly is. I mean, Russia with Diamonds fans, the old Russia with Diamonds fans will know Andy very well. He played well over 300 games for them. Bit of a fan's favourite and played at good level as well. And as you say, he's had excellent credentials as a coach in the ladies' game and the men's game too. I think he was first team coach at Mansfield as well. So yeah, excellent appointment for Rushton. I think he said he said this week that he's got 11 cup finals coming up, and so he knows the strength of what's required there. Strange decision of Andy Peake to go to Tamworth, I must admit. But yeah, I mean, in Andy Burgess, I think they've certainly got the right man who knows the club and knows the ambition of the club, which is obviously to sort of be where they were when he was a playing great. And I wish him all the best. I think it's a great appointment.
And yeah, you say about 11 cup finals. It must be a great time, actually, to be a manager and coming in at a club like that that are in the hunt. It's pressurised, of course, because everybody wants you to do well, make sure that you make those playoffs and continue it and maybe get that promotion. But it's probably a lot easier than someone like Nick Spooner. He's come in after the hole left by Jim Gannon up at Hyde United. Nick Spooner's been tasked with trying to keep them in the Northern Premier Division. There, it's with great credentials, 17 years at Bolton Wanderers in various roles, a youth academy development set up, and that supported by Martin Coyne, who's been at Hyde for a while as well. He's the assistant manager, and they've got former Premier League player Gavin McCann as team coach. But when you've got to come in as a new group like that in the dressing room, when you're battling relegation, and you've seen someone like Jim Gannon with his credentials not be able to achieve it, that's a lot more pressure, I think.
Yeah, very much so. I mean, Jim Gannon's shoes are tough ones to fill at the best of times. But obviously, in a situation with Hyde where it hasn't gone well for them this year under Jim, Nick Spooner's got a tough job. And you compare that to Andy Burgess, who comes in at a club who are on the up already. It's quite unusual, really, for a manager to come in a situation like that. I know we have had that at Stockport, and we've had it quite recently at Chesterfield as well, where new managers are coming to a club on the up with confidence. But I think Andy's probably come in at just the right time. I mean, he's literally got nothing to lose. Mm. It was very much like the Alan Shearer days at Newcastle, when he had 8 games to save them and didn't quite do it in the end, but we'll still go down as a club legend because he gave it a go. You know, he's literally got nothing to lose, and if he can win 6 or 7 of those cup finals, then he's got every chance. But as for Nick Spooner, he's going to need his boys to dig deep. He's going to need to start all over again and pick up for the last quarter of the season, because no one wants to see a big club like Hyde United languishing in step 5, do we?
Yeah, it's drifting around. It doesn't necessarily matter how good you are as a manager. You could just be in the wrong place at the wrong time. Yeah, and elsewhere, I've seen that Keith Rowland has left Tilbury, and it's probably not a season he'll remember fondly, having been ousted at Aveley back in the autumn. And it's someone with a great football CV as Keith's got. I guess he'll probably be licking his wounds for a while before trying to get back into management. Anyway, for those that may not have seen it, over the weekend, I did do a piece in the non-league paper about ground grading, and I've got some stick from it from various ground graders up and down the land. Basically, it was just, I think we need to rethink how it all works and what we hope to achieve with it. But I did put in there that safety is obviously the key thing that we have to put first and foremost. But and the big breaking news on Thursday afternoon is that the Wealdstone v Torquay United game this weekend in the National League is going to have to be played behind closed doors on safety grounds. A barrier collapsed back in January, and I think when they played Dover Athletic, and I know the club had put in backup measures and various mediation sort of measures. But Wrexham's winning celebrations on Saturday saw that barrier again fall down behind the goal as the supporters surged against it. And thankfully, nobody was injured. But it's a timely reminder of the constant pressures from all angles. We've spoken about clubs having to appoint managers, looking at promotion, looking at relegation. But it's also a gargantuan amount of things that clubs have to think about off the field just to play games and keep going.
Massively. In fact, we've seen three or four instances of that this week. I mean, obviously, Wildstone is the higher profile of one, and as a result, they've now got to play behind closed doors. But also with the storms we've had the last few couple of weeks, we've seen clubs show their vulnerability. Potter's Bar was one where I did a piece this week on them. They've now set up a GoFundMe page because they've raised previously £50,000 to meet those ground grading regulations that you spoke about last week. Gargantuan effort from their community, and then Storm comes in, rips it all apart, and they've got to start all over again. And it just goes to show how vulnerable these clubs are. And I feel for them really, because through no fault of their own, their step three status could now be under threat, and and they're having to beg, borrow, and steal again. And same with Tadcaster Albion. We've done a piece on them. Floods, unfortunately, their situation right on the River Wharfe, which has a habit of bursting its banks. I think it's four times in 7 years now, and it happened again on Sunday. Their ground is now submerged in water, and they're facing another five-figure repair bill. And you just wonder, it must be so difficult to run these football clubs and to keep everyone on side. And I don't think fans sometimes realise just what goes into it. And Wildstone's situation this week, fans will be raging, oh, I can't go and watch Wildstone, but there's little things like what happened against Wrexham last week, obviously, the safety authorities have gone in there, and next thing you know, they've got to close down for their own good. So, but it's a shame for them because they lose revenue, and it's also the barrier is going to cost them a fair few quid as well. So, yeah,
Well, it is all those things.
Like, shows
you can't foresee some of these things, like the Potter's Bar, their brand new stand, and it gets flipped over in the wind, and then it's damaged. It's no use to them for the ground grounding that they're trying to go for. You mentioned Tadcaster, the floods. I mean, there's nothing else they can do. All they can do is just watch the water rise and then damage everything that they put their heart and soul into. And yeah. Wildstone as well. They would have been looking at the game on Saturday, a visit of Torquay, additional revenue in the bar, and now, as you say, that they miss out on that, they've got to do these repairs quickly because they've got another game, I think, Saturday the 12th of March. That fast approach, so they've got to get, not only have you got to get that work done, you've got to get over the fact that all the people that are involved in the club, it's a bit like being a punch-drunk boxer, isn't it? You're on the ropes there. You seem to be doing well, and then suddenly someone's giving you an uppercut, and you're sort of trying to see the wood. You're trying to work your way forward. But they've also got to get it done quickly so that they can get playing. But it won't be just like, oh, they've got to get it done for the 11th of March. They've got to get it done probably for 2 weeks in advance of that so it can be signed off by all the authorities. And then it's all the other meetings that people at the club have to go through to achieve that. And there's a lot of stuff, as you say, that fans don't always say. And I wouldn't say that they don't appreciate it. They don't see it. They don't know about it. And maybe that's one of the things that we can do is educate people that there's a lot more that goes on behind the scenes than just the football on the field. But the football on the field is the thing that makes us exciting. And talking about exciting, the National League, I mean, it's a busy old calendar that we had during the week even, and one to come Saturday too. But, yeah, the wheels at Chesterfield, a few weeks ago, being a Chesterfield fan must have been one of the greatest things to be in the world. New boss Paul Cook's, he's had a tough intro, hasn't he? First game in charge at home last weekend, they lost 3-2 to Solihull Moors and also reduced to 9 men. Then midweek, they lost 2-0 to Wrexham and find themselves 6 points behind the leader Stockport County.
Yeah, he's had a real rude awakening, isn't he? Poor old Paul Cook at Chesterfield. Within the space of 2 weeks, he's watching Brieffert down at Weymouth, loses his star striker with a very serious injury, and then back-to-back defeats, including one at Wrexham, at home to Wrexham on Tuesday night, which could be quite damning, and all of a sudden they find themselves 6 points adrift of a Stockport side. It don't look like losing two games. So, it's all gone horribly wrong, and it's all from the situation with the previous manager James Rowe, which is all sort of none of the wiser, I think, on that, whether anything will be revealed on that front, I don't know. But it's all gone horribly wrong for them, and they need to. Paul Cook needs to dig deep into his vast experience, really, and see if he can rescue him out of it. I mean, personally, I'm an Ipswich Town fan, so I've followed Paul Cook's career quite closely recently, and he's not had a great year, and this is just capping it off. But I mean, you know, for a big club like that not to be involved would be criminal. But then again, there's a lot of big clubs in and around that those playoff places who are chasing. Notts County still not in there yet. I mean, they're the biggest club of the lot, and it's going to go right to the wire. Bournemouth don't look like they're going to let things slip. They've still got 3 games in hand.
Yeah, they could still go top if they get those games. And what's it? Their 15th clean sheet of the season this week, midweek. I mean, that's a. That's
incredible.
That's a stat I don't think I've ever I don't know, I'm sure someone out there will tell me, but 15 clean sheets in 26 league games, that's
Solihull Moors have got a very good clean sheet record as well, haven't they? I don't quite know what the stats are, but if you look at their clean sheet record,
Solihull have only conceded, yeah, they've had 28 games, haven't they, and conceded 26 goals. I mean, that's
incredible.
Another team. We mentioned Wrexham there, but yeah, with their win over Chesterfield, and they are now firmly planted in the playoffs, it does appear. And Ollie Watkins repaying some of that fee with both the goals midweek, and that makes it 3 straight wins for the Welshmen. And we always say about this time of year, if you're going to make the playoffs, you want to be in form. They're certainly hitting it at the right time.
Yeah, they certainly are. I mean, bringing in Ollie Palmer from AFC Wimbledon was an absolute masterstroke. I mean, not only he did cost them a lot of money, and a lot of eyebrows were raised, but he certainly hit the ground running early, and all of a sudden they're starting to dig out results that they wouldn't have probably dug out earlier on in the season. I mean, that we mentioned earlier, the last minute winner at Wealdstone. They didn't probably play that well at Wealdstone. Went 1-0 down. And looked like they were going to slip to a defeat, but watched by, I think, over 2,000 fans made the trip down there. I mean, the fans are really travelling in their numbers and acting like the 12th man. And they managed to dig deep. And in Phil Parkinson, they've got a manager who maybe not experienced at this level, but certainly knows his stuff, and he knows how to get the best out of his players. And I think they're going to be a major player in these last couple of months. You're certainly not going to want to play them in the playoffs. So I think they're going to have a major say.
And you mentioned Solihull Moors as well. They're in fourth place, and on Saturday, they're the side that we'll probably be looking to derail the Southend United train. You know, they are only 12th in the division. You know, and I know, having spoken to the coaching team there in the last week, you know, they don't want people to get too excited by the form that they're showing. But again, there's always a latecomer into the playoffs, and you wouldn't put it past Southend United for being the last one to grab that bottom spot there and make the playoffs.
Yeah, they've got a chance. I mean, I think they've left themselves a lot to do, but they're certainly on a roll. They're timing it very well. Kev Meyer has done a great job in turning things around there, because that wasn't a very nice place to be around early part of the season. But as I say, they went on a run of 7 wins and 8 or something, and all of a sudden they're now a mid-table team and looking up, and with clubs above them maybe faltering. Dagenham have had a couple of disappointing results recently, albeit a good side like they are, and Yeovil and Torquay struggle to put back-to-back wins together. They've got every chance. I just feel maybe they left it a little bit late, but even if they do finish the season on a high, you got to look at them next year being a real force. And if they can continue that progression, then they're going to be there or thereabouts, and certainly one of the favourites to win it next year.
Mm. And of course, as much as we love our football on the Saturday, actually the only reason we look forward to the weekend is to read the non-league paper on Sunday morning. And you've already mentioned a couple of articles that you've got going in there, John. Anything else we expect to read in this weekend's issue?
Our editor, Matt Babcock, has been speaking to Luke Garrard today, which is good. Obviously, Bournemouth have got Everton on Thursday, which I think I'm going down. I'm taking a trip to Everton. I've never been to Everton before, so I'm looking forward to that. So, Luke's been talking about his preparations for that game. I mean, that's a real David versus Goliath. In the fifth round of the Cup, which is unbelievable for Bournemouth, and they're going to go there with absolutely nothing to lose and try and upset Frank Lampard and his boys. We got a nice interview with him. We talk about Tad Caster. We've got various bits. You put me on the spot a little bit now.
All best laid plans in non-league, as we always know, always change about 7:30 on a Saturday evening.
We've had that recently as well. Certainly last week when all the storms kicked in and all the matches kept getting postponed, or we went from a full preparation to having to knock out all these pages and reduce the paper in size, unfortunately, and bring in articles that we set aside from previous. So yeah, it was a bit of a mishmash, but we got there in the end, and hopefully we don't get the same again this weekend. Hopefully the weather can hold out and we can get a full calendar in.
Well, always valued, always appreciated, as you are yourself, John. Thank you for your time. Thank you for joining us on the Non-League Football Show. We'll speak to you again very soon.
All the best. Thank you.
And that is it for this week. Thank you to all of my guests, as ever. Thank you to everybody for listening. Again, thank you for all your kind comments, both on the show and on the column in last week's non-league paper. Again, always open to ideas, suggestions for content for the show, and guests that you'd like us to try and get on. A few lined up, hopefully in the coming weeks. A few that are still on the back burner that we've been trying to bring on for a few weeks, but hopefully we will get them very, very soon. Don't forget, you can follow us throughout the season and join in throughout the week on social media at Non-League Show. Myself there at Tim Fuel, FUELL. And as ever, you can find us every week on Audio Boom, on Apple Podcasts, but also Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, CastBox, iHeart, Geo7, Listen Notes, Overcast, Podcast Addict, Podchaser, Radio Republic, via your smart speakers, and all good podcast aggregation sites. Stay safe, enjoy your football, thank you, and goodbye.
Chibber Jabber production. J-I-B-B-A, J-A-B-B-A.